Blue light?
I do like this.
Yeah, I was waiting for the blue light. I figured if it's not on, we shouldn't be going. Okay.
I do like this road.
I agree. Yeah. Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and call to order the Senate Committee on Judiciary. Thank you for being here, everyone. This today is going to be basically an organizational meeting as well as informational meeting. As you are all aware that we have the posting requirement of 24 hours notice, and because of that, we are not able to have public hearings until we have elapsed the 24 hours, which tomorrow we'll be able to actually have public hearings. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and call an organizational meeting to order. And the purpose for this is to adopt the committee rules and also for us to introduce ourselves. So let's go ahead and do the introduction of the committee rules first. And Senator Close, do you have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move the Senate model committee rules for the 2014 session.
Senator Close moves the Senate model rules for the judiciary to be voted on at this time. Let me ask, Shauna, is there anything that we need to call out that's different than what our standard rules are? Since there, I think there's a couple modifications.
Yes, Chair Prasansky, members of the committee, the Senate has adopted a rule this session that any amendments that are to be considered and acted upon by the committee have to be to the committee administrator at least 1 hour before you act upon them, and they have to be uploaded to OLIS in order to be considered. Another change is with minority reports, if you plan to issue a minority report, you have to have notice of the minority report given by the adjournment of the meeting, and you have to request the amendment from Legislative Council within 1 hour of adjournment.
All right. Any questions, comments regarding the rules as they are modified for the, I'm going to call it the regular short session of 2014? If not, any objection to the motion that's before us? Not seeing any, so ordered. And at this point, I'd like for each of us just to go through the formality of introducing ourselves. We'll save our newbie to the end. So starting from my right, Senator Roblin.
Yeah, Senator Roblin from Senate District 5, which encompasses parts of seven counties, parts of three congressional districts, goes from Charleston, who actually just north of Charleston, across the bridge, north until it gets to 3rd Street in Tillamook, the city of Tillamook, so half of Tillamook County, and then over into Polk and Yamhill counties with Sheridan and Falls City before it winds down on the backside of the Coast Range to Blatchley near Junction City, and then comes back over to the coast. It's the most beautiful part of the coast, and it's a great place to drive up and down the coast, which I do regularly now. So invite anybody to come spend their time and money on the coast. We love having people visit us.
Senator Jeff Cruz, Senate District 1, only parts of five counties, not quite quite as
exactly.
Many. Senator Roblin used to have Charleston. I now do.
That's true.
So we are neighbors. It was several years ago when I was having a meeting with Senate President on committee assignments, and because I do health care and education, and so we were pretty much done with our meeting. And as we're walking out the door, I said to the President, I said, you know, Peter, at some point in my legislative career, I'd like to serve on judiciary. Well, at that point, we went back into his office, and he gave me his 20-minute lecture on the wonders of Judiciary Committee, and I've been here ever since.
Very good. Senator Close.
I'm Senator Betsy Close. I represent Senate District 8, which is Lynn and Benton counties. We're a rich agricultural area. We also are growing in manufacturing. We've been in the metals industry for many years. Also the center of Oregon State University, which is highly regarded across the country for our agricultural research and other research. Visit us.
I'm Michael Dembro, newly appointed state senator for House District Senate District 23, see, old habits die hard. Senate District 23, which is northeast and southeast Portland. I think I picked up a Butte in moving south. I had Rocky, and now I think I have Powell Butte. I have Mount Tabor. It's a great district. It's the only district in the state to have a city within a city. It's the city of Maywood Park, which is incorporated within the city of Portland. There's a very interesting story there that I won't go into. Anyway, it's a real pleasure for me to be on this committee. I used to carpool with Jackie Dingfelder, who was on this committee before. She used to complain about the early start of the committee, but would go on and on about the interesting issues that it faced. And being neither a lawyer nor a cop, I didn't think I'd ever get to be on judiciary, but here I am, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, welcome. Shauna?
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee. I'm Shannon Newell. I live in Senator Denbrough's district, and today we're going to talk about Senate Bill 1540. It is brought to you by Senator Winters. It is based off of a 2013 Vermont law, which is the first of its kind in the nation, and it allows the Attorney General to deem that a patent filing was made in bad faith and prescribes the practices and circumstances that could lead to such a finding. There are proposed -2 amendments before you as well, which clarify some of the definitions and expand the coverage of it.
All right, so before we go into that, I will need to open up for the informational hearing. I do want to recognize Jessica that is going to be working with us. I'm not sure if you're going to be here on a daily basis, so we're alternating. Excellent. Pam, thank you for also being part of our group. And for the record, I am Floyd Brzezinski, represents District 4. And if I'm correct, it's still the largest landmass of Senate districts west of the Cascades.
You're right.
Mm-hmm. I think Senator Roblin is getting really close to...
When I consider my 3 miles of the ocean, I think I might get you.
Yeah, most people would, but... Going to get all wet.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're really welcome everyone that's part of our committee and everything that we'll be taking up this time, and really happy that we have an opportunity to be participating in this process. So with that, I'll go ahead and close the organizational meeting, open up a informational hearing, and as you've heard, the first bill that we're going to be hearing today is one coming from Senator Winters on Senate Bill 1540. Senator?
Good morning.
Good morning.
And thank you for hearing Senate Bill 1540. And for the record, I'm State Senator Jackie Winters, representing Senate District 10. And just a little background, I'm pleased to sponsor Senate Bill 1540 with Representative Williamson. And if you note, it's a bipartisan coalition of 30 other legislators. This bill, which is modeled on the groundbreaking Vermont law that protects small businesses from rising costs associated with patent trolls. I want to go back, and some of you probably know Dave Hafner, who actually volunteered and worked in my office a few sessions ago and as a private business owner. And he came to me during the last session with this situation that he found himself in, and I'm going to read for the record his, and you will get copies of his letter. Chairman Pergansky, Vice Chairman Close, and members of the committee, my name is David Hafner. I am the Executive Vice President of Landmark Professional Mortgage Company, located at 1255 Lee Street Southeast, Suite 200, Salem, Oregon. Landmark is an independent mortgage bank licensed in the state of Oregon. In 2012, we leased a high-production scanner from Canon in order to scan large documentation packages to be delivered electronically. Early in 2013, we received a letter from a law firm in Georgetown, Texas, accompanied by a complainant asserting several patent infringements relating to the use and transmittal of digital documents over a local area network or across the internet. Upon the receipt of the letter and complaint, I immediately contacted the Attorney General in Oregon to see if they had heard of such claims or could suggest how I might be able to deal with the allegations. They told me that because the issue was business to business, they would not be able to assist me and referred me to the Department of Finance and Corporate Securities. I was informed by the DFCS that they could not assist me in the matter and referred me to the Attorney General in Texas. I filed a complaint with the AG in Texas, but never received a reply. I also filed a complaint with the State Bar of Texas against the law firm, hoping to get someone's attention. Upon further investigation, I learned that LPMC was the target of a large patent trolling scam. Using some vague and highly questionable patents, combined with a series of shell companies to send out tons of letters to small businesses demanding approximately 1,000 per employee from any company that has a scanner connected to a network which has a scan to email functions. Our company does not have the luxury of excess resources to spend defending frivolous claims. Accordingly, as an Oregon small business owner, I am pleased for the efforts of Senate Bill 1540 that will help protect against such practices in the future and provide some avenue of assistance. Warmest regards, David Hafner, Executive Vice President. This morning, we received a call from Congressman DeFazio's office thanking us for undertaking this particular issue. I know that it's also receiving national attention, and they want to be kept apprised of how we progress here in Oregon. I believe that Oregon should follow Vermont's lead. I think this will become a growing concern and a growing issue. I have met with the Attorney General's office, and you will hear from them as well, that we, you know, giving them the added tools that they can use in order to help us to address this issue that comes into Oregon. And I really urge your work and passage of this. It's I think, you know, in listening to Dave, when he came to us as a small business owner, you can imagine, you get a letter in the mail that says, hey, you have infringed on your patent and it's going to cost you $1,000 per employee to settle this. First, you think it's just like all the other things that we have been receiving lately, the scams that are out there. You ignore it. I think he received another letter from this company and he ignored it. Then he received what looked like an official, well, it was official, demand from a law firm. You know, that you will be summoned into federal court and all of this. And so it's with this that I present this morning. And I really urge you to give it serious consideration. And I know that others have heard the stories, because I believe this morning there was a story in the Oregonian that actually talked about Senate Bill 1514. Thank you. Any questions?
I don't think so. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And who do we have next? Tim, I think you're up next. Looks like Aaron has come and gone.
Aaron has come and gone. Good morning. My name is Tim Nord, N-O-R-D, and I'm an assistant attorney in charge in the Financial Fraud Consumer Protection section. And we got this, I got a chance to review this bill, and we have suggested a few amendments that you have in front of you. Senator Winters is correct. You know, most of the UTPA does not empower us to between business to business. It's primarily consumer focused and individual purchases and so forth. So this bill is a little bit different with that respect. Some of the changes that we've made, you'll see, have changed mandatory shalls to may in order to give us discretion and allow us to basically for resource limitations when to proceed. I'm available if you have any questions generally about the area and so forth. And
I've got a couple of questions. I guess I'll just turn off. The lay of the land as to how this is working on the federal level, I understand from some preliminary research we did, there seems to be legislation moving forward and addressing this, knowing that this particular issue is dealing with more of a federal law area when we're talking about patents. Can you give us some perspective as to how you feel we as a state should be, let's say, reacting at this point or watching to see what happens on the federal level?
I think the legislation I'm most familiar with is directed a little bit more at actual lawsuits and so forth, so that it would require a heightened pleading standard and create more transparency, which is somewhat related to our demands. But our legislation is that has been proposed here is more focused on the front end, on those patent aggregators, which are entities that collect a bunch of patents or patent assertion entities. They go by a variety of names. But it's primarily to address the actual act, not determining anything with respect to a patent, which is all controlled by federal law, but instead the process by which they make a demand upon an Oregon company or an Oregon resident. And so it is a little bit different than what I'm aware. In addition, the Federal Trade Commission has begun a process where they begin information gathering and are looking at the issues surrounding patent assertion entities, and that is ongoing, and that may take a period of time for that process to run the course.
And a couple other questions I would follow up on. I want a little bit of information as to what you might know about Vermont, and also, is there any indication of preemption that the feds may basically want to control these type of enforcements through the federal system?
I think from the preemption perspective, to the extent we're dealing with the form of the demand itself and the amount of information, we're not running directly afoul of the federal laws with respect to patents, because we're not determining correctly whether someone has a valid patent or not, and we're going to, that of course we'll have to, and we're not preventing anybody from making a demand or asserting that. We're just saying here is the information that you have to have within the demand, whether you have a valid patent or not. So I think that I wouldn't be surprised if upon asserting this, if this were to pass, that somebody's going to challenge it and try to say that it is preempted in some fashion. But I think from our perspective, when it's limited to this area, we don't see that as a major issue at this point. With respect to the Vermont statute, it is structured. We did not sponsor this legislation, and it just came to us. And it is somewhat it's focused at the same problem, but it is structurally quite a bit different than the Vermont statute. If you want me to get into that, I can. But
well, I think, I mean, during an informational hearing, that's one of the reasons I wanted to schedule this early, so we can kind of see where we're at, what the lay of the land is, and whether we want to maybe take what has been proposed and come up with something that's going to be a better fit and model that the Attorney General's office does have a little bit more perspective on, because it seems to me under the tools that will be in the toolbox, it's going to be your toolbox that we're going to be adding these new options.
Well, just to try to quickly sum up, and we can provide a little more information if necessary. But the Vermont statute was one of the first ones passed. They had a kind of similar situation where a large out-of-state company sent out a lot of demands. A couple of other AGs, both the New York AG's office and the Nebraska Attorney General, have kind of tried to attack situations similar to this. And I think a couple of them have originated out of Texas. But the Vermont statute has a similar kind of definition of what's bad faith and what requirements should be in any kind of notice or demand. Where the Vermont statute thing goes is that if It puts the burden on the court to determine whether or not something is in bad faith. So, for example, if a business is sued, a business can respond in the lawsuit saying that the original demand was made in bad faith. In that case, the court can then, under the Vermont statute, the court can then require the patent assertion entity that filed the lawsuit to post a bond up to the cost of defending it if it made a bad faith claim. So I think that would kind of come into pass. If they made a, if they made some vague claim and then they sued you somewhere, you could come in and say, hey, I was not given fair notice, it was made in bad faith, and therefore the court could then create this bond. It gives the Vermont AG, in addition to that, the ability to investigate demands and to get assurances of voluntary compliance, similar to what our statute has, prohibiting, let's say, the conduct, and it'll, it gives the Attorney General the right to sue for a bad faith assertion, as well as a private right to also for the business itself to sue back if a bad faith claim was made. The original draft that we received kind of shifted the role of the court determining what is a bad faith assertion to the Department of Justice, the Attorney General's office, to make that determination and then kind of give a thumb, green light, red light before any lawsuit could be filed one way or the other. The amendments that we've proposed have kind of changed that in that we're not, the amendments that are in there now don't have us as a gatekeeper. And instead, a business could go ahead and sue if a, just like for another violation under the statute, that if they make a determination, so they could sue and seek statutory damages, attorney fees, for not anything with respect to whether the patent is valid or not, but that the form of the demand was improper. And then we have that same ability to investigate, obtain assurances of voluntary compliance, enjoin that kind of conduct, and so forth. And we can pass rules. The current amendment allows us to pass rules and so forth as guidelines towards that. But we're not serving, the amendments change that from a gatekeeper function. And that's kind of the background of where we're at.
Thank you very much. Senator Close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tim, I wonder if you can just answer a couple of questions about Senator Winter's testimony. Was the patent held by the Canon Company in this case?
Say that again.
Was the patent held by the Canon Company in this case? Was it on the copier that they leased?
Oh, with respect to the situation Mr. Winter's,
right.
I mean Ms. Winter's raised, you know, I'm really not that familiar with that demand or have, I know I have no personal knowledge of it one way or the other.
Well, I was just wondering if Canon had the patent in the lease agreement when they leased it, is there any protection in the lease agreement if you lease equipment like that?
Well, I think from anybody asserting the patent, I mean, you could, a lease could have some sort of indemnity or hold harmless back if you're the lessee leasing it. However, I don't know whether that particular one had anything. And, of course, regardless of what's in the lease or whatever, let's say Canon or any other entity might do, it doesn't prevent one of these entities from popping up and asserting that somehow some patent is in violation. And what we're really seeing a lot of is that a lot of these new patents are technology-based, and you have both regular businesses for in good faith combining patents together, share licensing and sharing those patents, and then you also see in some situations like we're talking about now these patent aggregators or assertion entities gathering together maybe patents that are rather vague, maybe very broad and so forth, and then with the backing of some law firms and so forth, they start to make these broad assertions and so forth.
That's all. So this patent assertion entity, do they share in, if there's a lawsuit, are they sharing in the award with the company if it was Canon, or does the company, have they already passed that off to them, some sort of authority?
You know, they could set it up any way that they wanted to. I mean, I could speculate and say that likely there is some form of sharing or contingency fee or some form of relationship. But, you know, that could be set up any different ways. There's no particular fashion that they would have to do it. Now, there has been, we're getting a little bit astray of this particular bill, but there has been some focus on, I know some of the attorney generals have focused on the role of attorneys, because obviously as an attorney you have certain requirements when you make assertions and so forth. So some of the AG offices have been focusing on, because attorneys are often held to a higher standard than, you know, a lay person and so forth. So there has been some attention on that. It's kind of a little separate from this, but it's related.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I'm assuming what happened in this case is that whoever brought the claim forward against Senator Winter's constituent was asserting that they had certain patents that were being infringed upon by Canon, and then that anyone that was down the line using this equipment was violating their patent. And so they're basically trying to position themselves like, you're violating, even though you got something from, in this case, from Canon, you're violating our patent, and you need to pay us for that infringement. And it kind of mushrooms out, and I mean, it truly is kind of like fishing, trolling, what comes in the door, what they can get. But I don't think they were actually acting on behalf of Canon, because that just wouldn't make sense.
No.
Right, and I think I'm not certain what entity asserted it, but I know in the New York case it was also involving copying and scanning, and I think the company, the press release I saw, they sent a demand to every company to show how broad these companies can. I think it was every company that was of a certain size, and I mean, they didn't even really have actual knowledge that they even had this particular equipment and whatever. They just targeted everybody that kind of fit a certain criteria that they came up with.
A little demographic,
and then fired away.
Yeah. Any other questions? Tim, thank you very much for coming over.
Thank you.
Really appreciate your insight. I think that's all we had scheduled for today in the sense of invited testimony. And so we'll leave it at that, since it is an informational hearing and we don't want to set any protocol as to anything else. So for the quote-unquote good of the order, we're back tomorrow, and I believe we're up for 8 o'clock. And I know the former Senator Dingfelder did enjoy us starting a little bit late, but because we're in the short session, it looks like we need to at least in the first week and a half, plan on 8 o'clock starts. With that, we're adjourned until tomorrow.
Maybe.